Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. For Fat Mascara.
Fat Mascara.
That sounded really annoying and creepy. Sorry. I'm not starting over, though. The podcast is starting. Let's do it. I'm Jen.
And we're off. I'm Jess.
Great episode, right?
This one's good.
What are we talking about?
We are talking about water. Does drinking it really hydrate your skin? Then we're talking about beauty brands and politics. When beauty gets political, yo. Then we're talking about cleanser. It's National Cleanser Week. Oh, my God.
I feel like you're on MTV House of Style right now.
Oh, my God. Cindy Crawford, Flava Flav, mashup. Actually, I don't think Flava Flav was ever on House of Style, but that would have been cool.
It would have been. Our guest is like probably the chicest psychiatrist I've ever met, Dr. Samantha Boardman. She's the founder of Positive Prescription, and we brought her on to talk about the connection of beauty and vanity and our minds and to make us happier and give us all little like happy pills and advice. And it was a really good interview.
Definitely gave me some food for thought.
Yeah. So stay tuned positive. For that. And then of course for Raise a Wand afterwards. Let's get into the episode. You shouldn't be drowning on your own. And if you feel you're sinking, I will jump right over into cold, cold water for you.
Jen, the other day I had a day off. It was amazing.
Good for you, Jess. I'm jealous. You took Monday off, actually, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I wish I did.
And, you know, it was cool. A lot of people don't take Mondays off. I flipped the switch, flipped the script. Okay. It's like a Monday off instead of a Friday. So I went to the spa. Gorgeous. I got a facial.
Ooh, lovely.
And as the woman was like poking around on my skin, she said, she like kind of pulled back and she's like, do you drink water? And I was like, not enough. And she was like, I thought so. And I was thinking, how does she know this about me? But then I was also thinking, like, is this actually – I've always been kind of skeptical when people say, like, drinking water is going to hydrate your skin. I know it's good for you. Like, you know, if you're not drinking it, you're probably not going to look amazing.
Yeah.
But is there really that much of a connection, drinking water, like, glowy Jean Godfrey June skin?
When you texted me about that after the facial, I was, like, ready to, like, come back with my answer. And then I was like, let me just ask the pros, shall I? Mm-hmm. So I emailed Dr. Mona Gohara, our buddy, dermatologist. Trust her implicitly. And I was saying, like, is there truth to that if you are really well hydrated? Models say that all the time. Don't you think when you're interviewing them backstage, what's your skin secret? What do they say?
I just drink so much water.
I drink a lot of water.
I try to get some sleep.
Fuck you. Anyway, so Dr. Gohara said, first of all, she was kind of annoyed that the facialist was, like, calling you out. She's like, I hate that
guilt. You told her.
Well, yeah, and she says, she writes, first of all, that's not even nice. Was she trying to sell her some fancy moisturizer or something?
There was a bit of an upsell at the end, but
well,
it's okay.
She's Dr. Gohara knows. In the case of outright dehydration, yes, your skin will be parched. She said, 99% to 100%, you are not dehydrated. We're talking about like you're in the desert for 5 days without water. That's the only time it's really going to make a difference. It's good to drink water for your body, but that doesn't equal hydrated skin. Hydrated skin is about barrier function. Mm. So if you have dry skin, it's because something's off with your barrier function. We've talked about skin barrier before.
Of course.
It doesn't matter how much water you drink. If you don't put moisturizer on top to seal in the water, or your barrier is kind of permeable and you're losing water, like, you're going to have a problem. So she wants you to put on moisturizer.
Okay.
But she did say drinking water was helpful, and I know you don't. So I have an idea.
I know.
You ready for it?
What's that?
Okay, like a year ago, this company sent me a moisturization tester.
Oh, my God.
This little thing you put on your skin, it tells you the percent of hydration. If you're down for this experiment, I'm going to put it on your face, measure the percentage, and then through the rest of the episode, I'm going to make you drink water, and we'll test again at Raise a Wand and see if you get more hydration.
Is that why there are all these little bottles of
water
everywhere?
Yes, I put all the water out. I'm getting so, like, when I was growing up in Philly, we did PJAS, Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Sciences. Like, I feel like I'm having that
dork.
Right now.
Okay.
Mean. Can I come over and test your hydration?
Yeah.
I'm turning it on.
Okay.
And then I'm
looks like it feels good.
Put it on your thing and then push this
that
button.
Feels nice.
Does it?
Yeah.
It says 99.9%.
Hydrated.
Yeah, but maybe I got like a really wet patch or something.
That's disgusting.
Let's try one more time. We can edit this out. You ready? Oh, no. Here it is. 44.9. Sorry.
So I'm very dehydrated.
I was reading it wrong. 44.9. I don't think I know what that means.
I don't know.
But we're going to do relative. So if after the end of the episode, okay. If you drink all this water, if you're higher than 44.9.
I don't think it works like that. I don't think it's like slim good body. This is going to like run through my veins. It'll like hit my
well, Dr.
Gohar
says
function.
Maybe not. But like, I just wanted to use my fun right. tool. Can
Chloe,
you just get
the intern,
on board?
Just passed me two like mini jugs of
chug,
water.
Chug. I'm just, aren't you excited about my tool, goddammit?
It's a pretty cool tool.
I'll put a picture of it on the blog and the Insta so you guys can see it. Okay, so in conclusion, stay tuned for Rays of Wand. We'll see if the water actually hydrates her. But truly, put moisturizer on. You're not going to get dewier skin just by drinking water.
Well, I do the moisturizer part, but maybe it's a two-pronged.
A two-pronged
yeah,
approach.
Two-pronged approach.
Okay, stay with us.
Jen, yesterday I met with this brand called Being By Sanctuary. And Sanctuary is that spa in London.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Remember, like, we're talking with Nicola, like, you know, they made these amazing products. They're not available in the US anymore. Well, they are launching a cool younger brand, Being By Sanctuary, mm-hmm. that's all for Gen Z.
Everybody loves Gen
they
Z.
They love the Gen Z.
So hot right now.
So, exactly. And so this is all for Gen Zs, and it's a body care brand.
Hmm.
And it's very cool. It has like all these little fun faces on them and all these like yummy, you know, flavors and caramel, hibiscus, all this, you know.
Gen Z, they love a hibiscus.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, well, why does, you know, what makes this right for Gen Z? And as I'm hearing about, like, as I'm looking at all like the packaging, it's very like bright and fun and kooky. But for them, they were talking more about the mindset.
Okay.
And none of this is new to me. I'm at Teen Vogue. But they were talking about their Instagram and how it's very political. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm showing it to you now. And if you guys want to log on, it's Being X Sanctuary. Some of the posts are, you know, and I don't like to get political on this podcast, but they're very political. There's a lot of like.
Do they? You mean like a liberal versus conservative political, or just?
Yeah, it's. Well, I'll just give you an example.
One.
Like, so one thing it says like this. There's a pair of hands holding up a sign, and all this is very consistent with their branding. And like, there are tons of beauty posts. Most of the stuff is very, very, you know, beauty oriented. But it says, "Vote as if the future depends on it." It does. Then there's something.
Vote for what?
Well, I think, you know, they're just saying be active, be political.
Okay.
Here's a better one. It's a quote from Sophia Bush. If men could get pregnant, the birth control conversation would be incredibly different. So everything is very politically mm-hmm. sparked.
To sell body washes and such.
I was, you know, I asked them, I said, since they have a board, they're not just like two girls like in their kitchen cooking up scrubs. I said, how did the board members feel about this? Because it's, you know, it's not their target market.
Yeah.
And they said, well, they were in favor of it.
Yeah.
And then I think about brands like Kat Von D has just had this big kerfuffle online where she had a contest, and then the winner, people on social media had looked at the winner's like Instagram account, and she had supported Trump. And Kat Von D was very vocal about how she was upset that the winner was a Trump supporter.
Okay.
And while she technically did not disqualify that person and say, like, you know, we're taking away your win,
yeah,
that person is no longer going to, like, you know, LA or whatever. They're,
harsh.
She said that, you know, this is, I don't know how it was resolved. Like, I really can't say, like, she kicked this person out, but this person's no longer the winner.
Do you think this politics have a place in beauty and beauty marketing?
Well, that's like what the world has changed. It's certainly even changed a lot in the past year. I was always kind of taught two things. Like, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about politics, like, at the, you know, the table or in business.
Oh, God. Oh, in business. Okay.
No, I don't mean just in general, but, like, right. I don't, when I come to work, I don't, and I am at Teen Vogue, which is a very, like, political publication.
Yeah.
So it is, like, I'm really the exception to the rule. But when I come to work and in business settings, I don't talk about religion and I don't talk about politics. And these are beauty businesses, mm-hmm, and they are very much talking about politics. And beauty is such a widespread,
yeah,
business that appeals to so, body wash appeals to everybody. It's going to be sold at Ulta in October, which I should have said. So I don't know. I'm kind of like, I'm grappling with this a little bit. I don't know what I would do if I were on the board of these companies.
You know what it makes me think of? Like, fashion, more sooner than beauty, did get into the politics game. Because if you go back to, like, the, like, even earlier, I mean, I only remember the 90s as far back, but, like, making a political statement on a t-shirt or with a fashion show was sort of part of being an artist and being fashion. So it made sense to me when it's in that industry.
But
with body wash, I, like, aren't you just alienating whoever doesn't agree with your political statement?
Well, yeah, yes and no. Like, with the fashion, I feel like it was, and I need to, like, really go through this much more thoughtfully, but with fashion...
That's why we have a podcast, girl. Think it out with me.
But with fashion, like, who was... Nike wasn't putting a stake in the ground. Was Converse putting a stake in the ground against, like, an administration? No.
But do any of the posts for this particular brand go explicitly against a particular political ideation? Well, because I'm thinking they're just very general. Go vote. Who can say no?
Well,
don't go vote.
I think from my conversation yesterday with the Believe, with the Being people.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it absolutely, I think with my conversation with the Being representative, it was anti-Trump. Lush has been, I believe, yeah, far more liberal. Kat Von D, absolutely anti-Trump. There's a lipstick line that I think that's actually called, like, F Trump.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So these aren't, like, controversial points of view. It's not like, oh my God, this weird, like, leftist, like, nut job, you know, fringe group. It is a very widespread opinion in the culture.
Yeah.
But to make it part of your business, I still feel...
But you can always argue it's only 50% of the culture.
Well, that's what it's I'm weird. Thinking. So, and brands like Ulta and Sephora, they're all over the country.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to start a pro-Trump makeup line. I see a white space in the market. Oh, why are you laughing? I'm a businesswoman. Like, don't you think if there's these, there would be an opposite side?
I think the neutral brands are probably neutral for a reason, or they right. just don't see a conversation. Right. I'm curious what you guys think. Email us. Let us know where you stand on this. I'm not necessarily interested in hearing your political opinions, but
sure, if you want to include them, because I'm sure I'll get some for my pro Trump. Oh, what can I call it? It's going to be a body wash line of, like, yeah, I'm into this idea.
I'm curious to know what your take is on brands that take a political stance. Does that incentivize you more to support them, or, you know, is it something where you're kind of neither here nor there, you're neutral?
You know what it reminds me of too? If you support a nonprofit, so many of these beauty brands have a philanthropical cause. Mm-hmm. Those are already by their nature a little bit sided towards one type of political ideology. Like, you could say, oh, it's going towards the NRDC, and then someone could argue that's a very liberal cause.
Right,
so
right.
In a way, like Body Shop or something with animal rights, and yeah. those seem like liberal causes, where another one might be giving to, like, Catholic Relief Services of America, and maybe that seems like a conservative cause. I'm really generalizing here. Mm-hmm. But just by giving money to charities, charities are political, like, you know, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So is it as new as we think it is?
That's an interesting point.
It's a different take on it for sure. They're definitely being more explicit about it. But I'm not – like – I wonder, maybe we just don't see them because they're not in cities and we live on the coast. I'm sure there are beauty brands on Etsy for sure, definitely, that are supportive of both sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah. I'd be curious to research that.
I want to hear what you guys think too, though. Is it going to alienate you from buying a product? And if I make a pro-Trump beauty line, will you buy it? If I make a – I can make both. I can make pro-Trump, anti-Trump, and then you sell both and you see which – people buy.
That happened at the pet store across the street from me.
What happened?
They had a Trump doll, like a Trump, like a, you know, Chewy doll, yeah. And a Hillary one.
During the election. Yeah,
during the election. It's really funny. I remember it very clearly. I don't know because they were dog toys. Like I was just kind of seeing them in the window and like laugh. I don't know which one won out. I have a nice relationship with the owner. I'll ask him.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll report back and we'll look into these brands some more.
Yeah.
And see what you guys think. Jess, guess what August 1st through 7th is? Dun-da-da-da.
Tell me.
It's National Cleanse Your Skin Week.
Oh, I'm going to be sure to cleanse that week.
I love these weeks and these days. Like... because I didn't cleanse any other time of the year, right?
So what happens that week? What are we going to do?
Well, first of all, I think it was the initiative of CeraVe, the cleansing company. They make cleansers. You know mm-hmm, them. Mm-hmm. And they did this
Excuse
whole—
Excuse me, just drinking my water.
Drink your water. She's still hydrating. Yeah. We're still going to find out if she's more hydrated. They did a big survey to go along with it, but they want to remind people of the importance of cleansing. And I was talking to them. I was like, do people need a reminder to wash their face? And they said, please hold while we give you the stats on the survey. You're not going to believe this. Are you ready? 40% of women skip washing their face altogether before bedtime.
You know what? I believe it because I have conversations with people 40%? In the beauty industry. And like, a lot of people do not wash their face.
Do you know what is out there? We discussed on last week's podcast the things that fly across the A subway train, the dirty, dirty things. Like the crap that gets on my face throughout the day, plus all the makeup I put on, I cannot imagine going to bed without washing my face.
I hear 40%. People like hawking loogies on the daily.
Even if you don't put makeup on, wash your face. Oh my God. And then this other one, this you'll love too. Ooh. 40% of women use body wash or hand soap to wash their face.
What it's 2017. There's an entire aisle just for body wash.
For face wash, you mean?
For face wash. And a body wash aisle too. Maybe they're confused. Maybe they went to the wrong one.
But I'm picturing people with like Palmolive kitchen soap and like, I went past the kitchen sink, like pump, pump a little lemon.
And then they're like, it's so weird. I have sensitive skin.
Like, why is it so dry? In honor of National Cleanser Week, I have to ask you, what's your nighttime cleansing routine? What do you do?
I usually do I take it off with Pond's.
Uh-huh.
Or
you go like a cold cream first.
A cold cream. And then... sometimes, like, then I'll use, like, a toner, and then I'll, like, do my skincare routine. Or I'll use a cleansing balm. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Pond's is very, like, balmy. Or I'll use a cleansing balm. I mean, I have a few that I use, like, different ones. Or sometimes if I'm not wearing that much makeup, I use a cleansing milk. I do not do, like, anything that foams or, like, a gel or anything like that.
Interesting. I've been getting on so I was talking to people at CeraVe, and I had them send me some of the products to try.
Yeah.
And I've been sort of doing a double cleanse with one of the products.
Oh, you double cleanse.
Well, they have... makeup removing cleanser cloths that are like the most gentle, super sensitive, mm-hmm. which I really liked. And then I'm always a foaming girl, but they have a bar. Remember, like, you know when there were cleansing bars? It's not like a beauty body bar. It's definitely
like a
facial
wash
as a bar.
Yeah.
It is amazing. It's like white and creamy and moisturizing, but for your face only.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like I like the action of like slipping the bar around, getting some suds going, and then washing my face. So I've been double cleansing.
I just don't like that because I feel like the bar always like flies out of my hands.
Okay, well, if you don't like that, they also have a hydrating facial cleanser.
Nice.
And a foaming facial cleanser. You don't like foam.
No.
You like the hydrating.
Yeah.
Guess what the best part of all of this is?
What is it?
Who's your favorite Fat Mascara co-host? Is it me? I'm asking the listeners.
Oh, I was like, well, yeah, that's a tough run for me.
You look offended. I got a giveaway for our listeners.
Amazing score.
Okay, in honor of National Cleanse Your Face Week, or whatever the hell it's called, National Cleanse Your Skin Week, We are giving away 50 people are going to get a set of these four cleansers I just mentioned from CeraVe. So you're going to get the foaming one, the hydrating one, which is like every dermatologist's wet dream, I swear. Like they have quotes from every dermatologist, non-drying, non-stripping. So that's lovely. Fab. The bar that I've been using that I really like. And the makeup removing wipes.
Excellent.
All of them like dermatologist tested and super approved. A value of $37.64.
That's actually a lot of money.
Yeah, because these are good like hydrating cleansers. We're not talking about like Palmolive dish soap
people. It's going to last you a long time too.
Maybe more than National Cleanse Your Skin Week.
I would say.
Okay, so if you want to enter to win, we're going to post this on the Instagram as well. But all you have to do is email info@fatmascara, put CeraVe in the subject, CeraVe, mm-hmm. That's the name of the brand, and then just put your name and address in the body of the email. And the first 50 people to send us their name and address,
yes,
will get a $37.64 prize package from CeraVe.
Nice.
I know, right?
That's really good.
It probably won't come till after National Cleanse Your Skin Week is over. So you'll have like, you know, a September cleanse or a late August cleanse.
It's good for so many skin types.
Yes. And I'm going to give you one too, Jess, because I want you to try these products.
I will. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. We are here with psychiatrist Samantha Boardman, the founder of Positive Prescription. She's in the house. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay, so we're going to get into the intersection of psychiatry, psychology, and beauty, which do actually intersect, I think. But before we do that, tell us, where do you practice medicine and what is Positive Prescription?
I'm at Cornell, and I started there and I've stayed there. I did medical school there. I did my residency there, and I'm still on the faculty there. And Positive Prescription was but the opposite of everything that I learned in medical school, because it's really born out of this interest and need to into the science of wellness. I care about sort of less about, you know, sort of what's wrong, but more about like how what's strong. How can we focus on wellness and health rather than illness? And I was really good at misery and really good at illness and kind of dialing down people's symptoms, which is super important. And someone would come to my office with a chief complaint, and that's the centerpiece of everything. And it never occurred to me to focus on anything else. And then a couple of years ago, I got fired by a patient who was like, you know what? All we do is talk about everything that's wrong in my life. And she was right. And so I ended up going back to school, and I got a degree in positive psychology, which is really the science of health and wellness. And so Positive Prescription is really based on that. It's my website where I sort of share all these sort of actionable information that's, I think people really find it to be relevant for their lives in daily ways that they can integrate into their lives, never in like a finger wagging way. It's all science based, sort of like little micro changes. And I think those sort of it's in your daily sort of micro moments where the magic lives.
Yeah, most people think of your practice as like, well, I have a problem and we need to fix it. So
yes,
listen up, even if you don't have a problem.
What are these micro moments? Like, what are you talking about?
Well, I think like, you know, so we often think of, you know, you go to see a psychiatrist at a big inflection point, right? Like when something big and bad is happening mm-hmm. in some way, and when you've been sort of hit by a boulder, or in between jobs, or in between relationships, something like that. And what it really sort of started like emerging to me is it's not really how you're dealing with this awful thing that's happened, because people are like stunningly resilient. It's amazing how in the face of sort of loss or even difficulty, people really are able to bounce back. And it's not what we usually think. We usually think like, oh, you need to talk to somebody, or oh, you need help. And even after like 9/11, the assumption was so many people would go on to develop like PTSD, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're astonishingly resilient. And I think a lot of it has to do with social support during tough times. But, you know, it's just having a bad day. It's like that game of whack-a-mole you're playing all day long and like putting out 1,000 fires at once. And that most people really feel that way today. And I think they're sort of overwhelmed and overcome by the daily hassles. And like, let's face it, nobody's bringing you a casserole because you had like a bad commute. You know, the air conditioning's broken. Like, that's just like no one cares. It's boring. You
but
know,
those are the ones that add up, aren't they?
But that's the stuff. And then you sort of contagious because you're walking around with this negativity. And then we all get so sucked into, you know, that just productivity pornography, and we're obsessed with like, how can I do 1,000 things at once? And I think it really starts taking away from like those little things and those micro moments to get back at that, that can really are life enhancing.
Yeah.
What's like a good life enhancing micro moment?
A lot of it, I think, has to do with our interactions with other people. That, you know, that you'll sort of be walking around looking at your phone, looking down, and not just sort of looking up, making eye contact. Even I love this study of looking at people who, when they made eye contact with their barista and said thank you, they went on to have a better day than those who were just like scrolling through their phone and like grunting and throwing like their change on the table. Like these little things, it's holding the elevator door. It's like, oh, saying, can I get you, you know, I'm going around the corner to get a sandwich. Those little things, these little micro interactions.
And being kind to people.
And sort of randomly, it can be strangers too, like people who talk to strangers on the train. I mean, I don't know if that's to be encouraged in New York City, but then you might end up in my emergency room. But then it's just, they actually go on to have a better day. And I think we make the wrong choices based on our assumptions that are wrong. Like, oh, I just need to get more done. Or it'd be weird if I spoke to that person. Or wouldn't that be awkward? But it is in, even with our friends and with our loved ones and even with strangers, it's like giving them the time of day and mm-hmm. like looking up. And if someone says, hey, look at this, actually like looking up from your phone and putting it away and sharing a moment.
I love that.
It's kind of so cool. Nice. You know, yeah. Chocolate tastes better. I love this study. If you share a piece of chocolate with somebody and even a stranger, it tastes better than if you eat it.
Oh.
They're even near you or like maybe doing something or looking at their phone. And then you ask people to rate the chocolate and they also get a piece, but it's not in like the synchronized way. They rate it as tasting less good. And it's the same piece of chocolate.
It's so funny.
It's a shared experience is better.
I'm thinking of a beauty example. You know, when people are getting their makeup done and you're just watching them get their makeup done,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It relaxes me. Like, even if I'm not the one that's, like, having makeup brushes on my face.
There's something weirdly soothing about that, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Even, like, all the – Jess and I always talk about this. Like, all of the beauty, like, products, the beauty world, there is something that can be really positive and soothing about it. But as, like, very strong women who are a little bit feminist, too, I've heard from other women – you know, they feel like they can't reconcile their feminism with beauty. Like they feel like they shouldn't have to put makeup on to go out into the world. So I'm wondering if someone is like that, where they're like, I don't need lipstick, be yourself. You don't have to wear makeup. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you reconcile that with the fact that like, I like wearing makeup. It makes me feel good.
Or even the interest, if I can just add on to that, even just the interest in beauty.
Like, yeah, it seems superficial.
Frivolous and like a little embarrassing.
Tell us it's not. Thank you.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I've, you know, for a long time felt really guilty about loving clothes and makeup and, you know, even doing my nails and like feeling like that made me feel good. And it was sort of like my secret that I really like that mattered to me in some way, because how dare you be taken seriously in a world, you know, especially even in medicine, where who cares about how you look? You're supposed yeah. to have greasy hair and circles under your eyes. But you know, there's a lot of research out there, and I think maybe it's why I started looking into this, that like we're sort of all off the hook here, mm-hmm. and that it's really important to feel strong. And I think for those of us who do feel good by, you know, using these products or, you know, putting on a dress that makes us feel good, that's one of our little, like, I think that's just in our arsenal of stuff that maybe makes us feel strong. Someone else, it might be like going for a run or doing something, you know, doing something else that sort of gives them that feeling of strength. And in old-fashioned sort of mental hospitals, they always used to have a beauty salon in them, because one of the things that happens when people become really depressed is they stop taking care of themselves. If you mm-hmm. started to see, you know, a woman who was usually typically really well-groomed, who had chipped nails or, you know, her roots were really growing out, that was unusual, and it could go along with some other symptoms of that self-neglect. And part of getting well was going into that hair salon in the hospital and having your nails done and having your hair done. And I think that they intuitively knew that when you looked better, you also felt better. It doesn't mm-hmm. just go one way. It doesn't, you can't just say, oh, it doesn't matter. I think to some people it does. It's just one of those things that does matter to them. And you feel stronger. It's the same way, you know, if you put on a dress you feel good in. You know, you stand up a little taller. You're more mm-hmm. open to meet somebody new. Your body posture changes than if you're in, you know, something that's too tight or you sort of don't feel good in. You'll sort of hunch over. You're not in a good mood. And it's not going to ruin your day, but it's not going to, like, enhance your day either.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, beauty is just one of the tools. You know, for somebody it's a run or, you know, doing, you know, whatever hobby or something. But how do you know if your focus on looks and beauty, et cetera, is becoming too much, too big of a tool, too much of a special hobby or whatever, you know? Yeah. Like, when does it veer on unhealthy or even, perhaps this is a separate issue, but like dysmorphic, where, like, you know, yeah. I really need to fix that.
Like, my
know,
nose is so big, thighs. I got to contour for 3 hours.
Yeah, or, you know, like, my body just isn't quite where it needs to be. So I'm like going to keep on focusing on this.
Yeah. No, and I think it's really important to give yourself the permission to love beauty and beauty products and to take care of yourself. But then there is that darker side of it. And, you know, really the sort of litmus test of that is it interfering with your life and your lifestyle or your friends or your job? You know, are you spending that much time looking in the mirror? And are you buying, you spending more money than you should be, than you would budget for, and you don't feel like you can control it? I mean, I think that's when you're sort of going into that darker side. Another point about that is I think sometimes when people are a little, you know, a little bit depressed or anxious or just not at their best, they'll sometimes use this excuse of like, oh, I need like a lot of self-care. And we're told a lot in magazines or in other places, like, oh, take care of yourself first, take care of yourself first. And sometimes I think people use it as an excuse to kind of press eject and withdraw from their friends or their family. They'll be like, oh, I can't go to my friend's birthday party tonight because they're, you know, it's going to be too late, or at the restaurant that I don't eat the food at. And, you know, I need my beauty sleep, or I'm going to be doing a mask tonight, or I've got to drink my juice instead. And I think that's sometimes self-care. It's really important, but not too much of it when it starts to undermine, I think, your well-being.
Uh-huh. Like when they sort of step out from regular life because it doesn't fit with their self-care routines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I know, like, well, I remember being, I mean, I don't know what you think about this, but, like, I remember I was, like, diehard Weight Watchers for years. And Weight Watchers, the beauty of it is, like, you can eat everything as long as it fits into the plan. But, like, there were times where I'm like, I'm not going to that restaurant. I mean, I don't do this anymore, and I hope that I don't ever do this again. But, like, I had opted out of many social occasions because, like, I was like, they don't have anything at that restaurant for me. And I don't know if you would see that as... But if this like kind of fits the profile of what you're talking about, but it was like, I was like, I'm being good to myself. It's just not worth the points, or yes, like, you know, yes, that kind of thing. But it was stepping out of something because I thought that it was good for like my body, but I actually missed something that I think is more important, which is like being with friends and like having a normal life.
I think so. And I think sort of looking back on things, and even you ask people who are older, like, what do they regret most? And sometimes it's just like not showing up.
Yeah.
Stuff, you know?
Yeah. Like, when you're not showing up, maybe it's a problem.
Yes.
Or if you don't feel good in like your jeans, like put on different jeans and then show up.
Totally. And one thing, like get rid of the stuff.
Yeah, no, that's good advice.
But get rid of the stuff you don't feel good in, you know? Yeah. Like somebody else might, you know, enjoy that dress or that, you know, whatever, that pair of jeans that to keep those skinny jeans in your closet just so, you know, one day you'll fit into them. Like, get rid of them. They're mocking you sitting there. Just like if you have things that you feel good in. And I do think when you use those excuses of a diet or, you know, oh, I've got to stay home and do this beauty regimen, or I'm on a, you know, I can't miss this spinning class or something, and then you're missing out on some of those social interactions, I think, yeah, that is undermining your connections and your well-being. And it's time to think long and hard about, like, wait a minute, am I using this as an excuse to hide behind something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot.
When you say connections, I feel like a lot of us are like, we're connected even if we're not going out because we have social media. And, like, the beauty industry is so big on social media. And Jess and I follow a lot of women that I will scroll through and I will look at their pictures. I'm like, she's so pretty. This is so gorgeous. But I'll watch other people scroll through and they'll be like, oh, I can never look like her. And it's almost like they're hate following.
There are a couple of people I hate follow.
Well, JK, JK, JK. But, like, how do you – so my question would be, how do you reframe the way you're dealing with – and I'm not talking about friends that you know.
Yeah.
I mean these, like, big influencer women that – probably have retouched their photos and things like that, but how do you reframe looking at all these images so that you don't leave your little social media session feeling worse?
Well, they say it takes about 17 seconds to feel badly just when you start scrolling through Instagram. I mean, it's like
for anybody.
Party.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
I think it's for young women.
Okay.
I've got to go look at the study again, but I think it was for young women, and that you just that self comparison mode that kicks in of, oh, I'll never have that body. I'd never have that great hair. Look at her luscious lips. Look at like her curves, like that shading. I could never do that makeup, and that it really can start making you feel badly about yourself, like, unless you're looking at it as
you're priming yourself, being like, this is just for fun. Like, you know, it's sort of it's beautiful, it's choreographed, it's sort of curated in a way, and it's really just a fantasy that you're observing rather than actual real life. And comparison can be really healthy at times. You know, you see it with, you know, young children, or, you know, with artists or athletes or whatever, that it's really important to sometimes compare yourself to somebody else. Like, I can do better than that. Obviously, you should be comparing yourself to yourself, but it isn't so unhealthy to think, oh, if I can run a mile, you know, last time he did it faster than I did, you know, this time she's going to beat him. So it's not so unhealthy, but I think when it becomes so unattainable and so beyond what could be even your possible reality, it can get pretty unhealthy. And I think if that stuff like makes you feel bad consistently, unfollow them. You can, you know,
it's I don't know why you think it's set in stone.
I had to unfollow Emrata.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Just those proportions are not normal.
You were just saying unattainable, and I was thinking of a couple influencers, and I was like, either it's fake or I don't know what's going on, but like, no one's going to look like that ever.
Yeah. So, it's sort of fascinating. I mean, if you're sort of looking through that lens.
But if you treat it like a music video, just something fun to watch, not like,
like
a human.
Like, it should be like a disclaimer, like they're on cigarettes, like, you know, like, this is a fantasy. Or like, you're watching the best possible. Yeah. I mean, you know, people are looking at Instagram. I mean, I see like 9-year-olds with cell phones and, you know, their own Instagram accounts. Little scary, but I don't know if. Listen, I know when, you know, when I was a little kid, there were always kids that were, you know, faster into beauty, into fashion. Like, I was into beauty super young, but I feel like I was like one of the only ones in my group that was into it. Now I go and I see girls who I thought they were like 16 and they're 11. Like, everyone's really into beauty, and if they're looking at Instagram, they want to look like Kim Kardashian or Kylie. Like, I feel like the beauty culture has really like aged down.
Yeah.
So would you agree with that, and like, what sort of implications do you think there are?
It has trickled down, and like, it is sort of that self-esteem thing. I think that self-comparison, when these, especially these little girls, can't sort of enjoy, I think, just kind of being themselves and running around in a pair of, you know, ripped shorts and a t-shirt, where suddenly you sort of see them looking in the mirror a whole lot more. And I've got a daughter who's 9, and I sort of noticed that recently, that she suddenly is so much more aware of. And at that age, I mean, I had no clue. I was wearing like a little smock dress and pigtails, you know, and it was just not weighing in on that kind of thing. And I think that self-comparison does kick in, and they're so much more aware of the beauty out there that is so unattainable. Like, oh, that girl has blue eyes and they're so pretty, or she's so tall, or she's so thin.
Yeah, it's easier to find. I guess that's what my point is. Like, you know, before I feel like you had to kind of look for it, or like, you know, see an actress in a movie and then aspire to it. But now everyone is kind of, there's a blurring. You don't know who's 16 or 12 or 22.
They all look, or 100. I mean, like, they all look sort of the same, though. But I think it is that sort of just knowing it's a fantasy is a helpful distinction. Mm-hmm. And I think also, like, around that type of thing, it's, you know, it's fun. If you're having a good time with, like, putting on makeup, and it's almost creative, and it's play in some way. Yeah. It can be a form of play. And I think that's the beauty of beauty, is you get to, you know, be a different, you get to wear a new lipstick and feel totally different.
Yeah.
And so if you're using it as a form of play rather than like, I feel ugly without this.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Do you think that it's gotten to a place where it's easy to take like a pot shot at like the Kardashians, but that kind of super sexual beauty is more prevalent today than it was before? I mean, when I was younger, I wanted to look like Madonna and Debbie Gibson, and Madonna was very sexy, but I feel like it's super turned up right now.
Yeah, it's dialed up. I mean, I had those Madonna do-rags too, I confess. It was not good. But it is, and even you're certainly seeing it in the fashion. I mean, it's really sexy. I mean, it's very porn star stuff.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's the
like
whole
the full
package.
Glossy lips, the like, it's all long and wiggy.
And that, I mean, the one side is you can say like whether maybe there's like an openness to it, but it is early. It's coming earlier and earlier. And the other side of that, though, is you're seeing, maybe you're seeing it trickle down to younger children, but you're also seeing, you know, women in their 40s who, you know, are trying to look like they're 25, or even women in their 60s are trying to look so much younger. And I just went to go see the Irving Penn show at the Met. Mm-hmm. And there was the beautiful woman who he married. And she's such a woman. And she's so beautiful. And I think she must have been like 27 in some of these photographs that she took, those iconic pictures of her. And it's funny, looking at her, she looks older in a certain way, but she really looks like an elegant woman. She does not look like a girl. And it's funny, I saw it with a fashion designer, and he said, women look like that then. They looked like women. They didn't look like girls. And the embrace of that kind of the womanliness, not the childishness, like the girly look, or trying to, like, you know, all those women who are like, oh, I'm going to dress like my daughter. Like, no, you're not friends. Mm-hmm. Like, you are her mother. Don't look like her.
Very, like, Real Housewives.
Oh, yeah. God, what are you doing?
Yeah, part of what plays into this, too, I think, plastic surgery is obviously more prevalent now, cosmetic plastic surgery, than it was then. Are you ever asked to consult on, you know, cases of plastic surgery that have psychological repercussions? And what are some of the issues or maybe the positive things that come out of getting plastic surgery?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are, like, a lot of positive changes that can happen. I do think, going back to the mothers and the daughters, I do think sometimes, like, the mothers want so badly for their daughters to be popular and beautiful. They're so willing at such a young age to have their, like, hair blown out at 9, you know, or their nails done regularly. And, you know, to get that nose job as young as they can. I've never consulted on a surgery patient like that. And most plastic surgeons don't, unless they think there's some kind of underlying, like, you
it's
know,
not, so it's not required to have any sort
definitely,
of,
definitely
no, even if you're a younger age or like under 18,
no,
as long as your
I mean, it's
son.
Really, as long as like the doctor and that you've been cleared medically to do it. Absolutely. I mean, with, you know, there's some things that you really notice, like a young woman whose, you know, breasts are just too enormous and she feels like she kind of, you know, she can't.
No, that's almost a health issue at that point. Yeah,
absolutely. Or, you know, a nose or something like that. I mean, I always urge patients I see. I don't see anybody under the age of 18. Just wait. Your body is changing so much. And even like your face is changing so much before you do anything. You might regret it if you get your nose done, you know, when you're really under the age of 18. I mean, for friends of mine who have kids, like, your face is going to change. Grow into that. Like, maybe you'll regret having done something or created some little ski slope somewhere you wouldn't want to do. I think it's really a case-by-case issue, though, and it is something we're seeing more and more in kids and in breast implants in young girls as young as, like, 16.
Is that really still happening?
Oh, yeah.
In New York City?
Mm-hmm. Literally. It's insane.
Breast reductions, which we've talked about.
Breast reductions, but, like, I feel like breast implants are, I just feel like I don't see them as much anymore.
Well, they're kind of.
I'm not judging. I just feel like I don't see them. So they must be getting very good.
They are good. It's true, though. You know, because what they are is they're, like, the perfect little kind of perky ones, but which is, you know, fine maybe at 16 because your body hasn't kind of grown into itself yet. So it's just. You know,
oh, my God, what I wouldn't give for my 16-year-old boobs right now.
I was like, wait a second. Like, are these perky ones? Do they have, like, a brand name? What are these perky boobs?
Oh, the gummy bear. The gummy bear.
Oh, remember the gummy bear. But that can be that was any like, size,
yeah,
though,
like, that's, like, a
bear.
Kind of. That's
yeah.
A good,
yeah. They're, like, kind of, like, those perfect little perky, like, large B, small C, kind of. But, you know, these 16-year-olds shouldn't be having that.
Because those aren't, like, I think people don't realize, too, they have to be updated every 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. Are the perky ones, they cost more?
Now you're a plastic surgeon.
I'm not a candidate for them. I just want to know, like, you know, how things that look, like, better, they have a better quality, they're more expensive. Are the ones that are subtler, are they more expensive than, like, your Vegas baby, like Pam Anderson ones?
I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Right. I'm gonna get to the bottom of this.
The boob guy.
I just think, you know, I just wonder, you know, if it's like, you know.
Absolutely. Like, expensive makeup tends to be subtler and not, like, super bright garish
colors. Yeah, and there's, like, silicone or saline. Like, which ones are you using? Gummy bear.
Okay, we're going to table
this. For future
reference.
Yeah, but thank you for slime soon. Like, slime's the perfect consistency.
The Gen Zs are going to be all over that. Yeah. Okay. So what's your number one gripe?
With what we do, we write about beauty, beauty advertising. Does any of this bother you?
I just think maybe it's the need for newness incessantly. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe
it's my gripe too.
Really?
It's just like we have to just kind of, you know, reinvent the wheel.
And, you know,
constantly.
And then they'll discontinue my favorite lipstick, you know, something like that. That really.
What did they discontinue? Did that ever happen to you?
There was some Tom Ford color that I was like, you can't.
That's
do
so
that
funny.
To
somebody
me.
Else just told me about a Tom Ford color because he, like, redid the line, and she's like, where do I find it?
I thought that your gripe was going to be much more heady and, like, you know, cerebral.
Oh, hell no.
I didn't think it was going to be about a discontinued lip color. But, like, is there anything? Okay, but I get what you're saying. The newness, the kind of, do you feel like we're making up trends? We're making up, like, nonsense?
No, because I do find the value in in beauty. And I think it's just important for women to feel really good in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So whatever is going to work for them, like, I'm all for it. And, you know, for younger women, too, I think it's really important that they, if that's part of their routine and part of something that makes them feel strong, I'm all for that. But I don't think it's something, I don't have an issue. I think the advertising is a little bit misleading, obviously. And you know, you're not going to have that body when you use that product, and your eyelashes are not going to look that long. So that's always been the case. So you have to know that. I mean, like, we're also smart, informed consumers. Like, come on. Like, we can't be wagging our fingers at them. Like, we know better.
Yeah. And what do you think the industry has to be proud of at this moment? Are there any strides that we've made?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something that it's out there. I think for so long it was sort of in the closet a little bit for women, that like you were sort of embarrassed about, you know, the beauty routine a little bit. Like, men could always announce, like, I'm going to the gym, and, you know, like, a woman would be like, oh, I'm just going to go around the corner, but she was having her nails done. You know, like, you would never say it or, like, kind of come out like that. And I think women are much more comfortable now talking about their like, what they do, and not just, I mean, it's, you know, maybe it's not something they do, you know, other than with their friends in some way, but it's come out of the closets and out of the bathrooms a little bit.
All the listeners know about my mustache.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope that makes them feel better. And, you know, truly. So.
Yes, but I think that that's kind of really liberating. Like, oh, no, I'm not the only one, you know, who's, like, got this, like, hair issue or this, you know, things that we sort of were embarrassed about. And I think that the beauty industry has been really wonderful and being like, no, it's okay. Like, this person has a weird mole behind their ear, too, or, you know, there's something that it's taken away from, I think, a lot of that body shaming, though, that people were embarrassed about things that were sort of quirky or weird or the unibrow or whatever. Like, no, I pluck it too. You know, like, it's okay, and kind of giving ourselves permission to talk about it.
Getting back to, like, a positive prescription, to use your term, I wanted to ask you about self-confidence, because a lot of the language that's out there is always like, you be you or you do you and just be confident. And it's very just like, it's easy, just do it.
Right.
And if you're not feeling, like, in a good place about yourself, it's not that easy. So I wonder, is there any exercises somebody could do to boost their confidence? Or is there any advice you have that is, like, a little bit more practical or based in science than just, like, be happy with who you are?
Oh, my gosh. That's like, pet peeve of mine. Like, oh, be happy. Or really a pet peeve is be yourself. Because, you know what? What does that mean, frankly? Like, we're all in motion. We're all acts in progress. Like, there's a really probably good self and a really scary one, and it's not the same that it was yesterday, and it's not going to be the same tomorrow. And we look back and we realize how much we've changed over even 6 months or a year or 5 years, but we have a really hard time imagining how much we are going to change going forward. And I love how we are sort of in this constant transformation, and that we're works in progress. And when people say be yourself, it's meaningless and useless. And I used to get really sort of nervous when I would publicly speak and someone say, oh, be yourself. And I thought that's the worst advice, because if I was going to be myself, I'm going to run right out that back door. And so I started thinking to myself, what would Barbara Walters do at this moment? And it was just this sort of way out of my own head of sort of self-pity and, oh my gosh, I'm going to mess this up, and anxiety, and to give me access into somebody else. And I think that really speaks to this idea. Sometimes don't be yourself, be on you. Like, what's the opposite thing?
Be on you.
Yeah. What's the thing? Like, you probably, like, if you're nervous right now, like, maybe you want to go and eat a bucket of ice cream or stay home and not go out with your friends tonight or whatever. What's the opposite thing that actually might help you feel better right now? And I think, like, it's the being on you can be really liberating, because you don't always have to be yourself all the time, because there is no perfect self. There's your values. That's who you are. But the idea that you have to kind of be true to yourself, I mean, we're not Hamlet. Like, you don't have to do that. And, you know, to thine own self, don't be true. Who are people who inspire you, even if you don't feel like being un-you and doing that opposite thing? What about somebody who really inspires you? What would Barbara Walters do right now? What would, you know, Michelle Obama do right now? What would somebody who you really think, you know, would have good judgment in this moment? It might be somebody you know. It might be somebody, you know, who's a role model. And I think even we can find examples in literature of, you know, what would, you know, there's a study looking at kids, and you could say, you can say to a kid, like, oh, clean up your room, or, like, or what would Harry Potter do right now? Like, those types of things are access somebody else's strengths.
I was giving a presentation the other day, and I pretended I was somebody else.
Who'd you pretend you were?
I don't know if she's listening, so that might make her feel weird, but my friend Lucy, she gives amazing presentations, and I told her.
Did it work?
I think it did. It went really well. But she gives like baller presentations, and I love watching her talk. Like as she's like done them in front of me, and I'm just like, she could be talking. She could be reading like the phone book, and I'm like, oh my god, that was gripping.
So
I tapped into her because I don't. That's like not my jam.
I love that though.
But like, yeah, but I left. But when I was done, I was like, I felt like buzzy, you know?
Yeah. It's liberating to get out of our own heads sometimes and to go against our grain. Like, I think sometimes we have these automatic responses, like, because it's just, like, in our repertoire of, like, behavior. It's like, oh, I always do this when this happens. And then when you can sort of break away from that, and it's really liberating to kind of be on you and sort of notice the smorgasbord of other options available.
It's like Beyoncé with Sasha Fierce. I don't think she needs to be Sasha Fierce anymore, but... like
yes.
When she was like a long time ago, she said she turned into Sasha Fierce.
Ego. Yes. And it's kind of like that best self I think she's accessing in some way. And that's what we need to aspire to, you know, rather than, you know, whatever this notion, this vague idea of like, oh, yourself.
Don't be on you. That is so funny. That's like the most like uninspirational but inspirational thing.
Yeah.
Like, you sit down. Let somebody else take over.
We've seen just about enough of you. We know how this will play out.
Well, I think it gives people permission to when you can do that for yourself, and you can also do it for other people because you can let them be on them. Because sometimes I think we're like, oh, I know.
Oh, I hate when people are like, you always do this. Yes. Or like, that's not you. And I'm like, how do you know who I am? I might be changing.
Else be on them. Like instead of, because we can go into that, I think, like prediction mode. Like, I know how this movie ends. I know you're going to do this and then this. And like, actually, maybe not. Like, let them be on them too. So I think it can be.
It goes both ways.
That's cool. Yeah.
You gave us a couple healthy habits just now. Those are two good things. And we also talked about putting the phone down, which I feel like I've heard from every expert always. But what are some other like little things you could be doing throughout the day that are going to make you feel more happy and more beautiful and more, you know, plugged into the world?
Yeah. And I think also like the how is really important too. I think like putting the phone down, like, 'cause you're not really going to do that, or if it's in your pocket, like literally have to turn it off and like bury it in your handbag and not have it near you. Or if you're on your desk, like don't have it, like put it on the other like side of the office, like don't have it near you. I think you really have to make those kind of changes. But those interactions with people, like interact with your loved ones, like make sure that the first thing that you touch in the morning is not your phone. Like, don't look at that. Like, if you're, you know, with your significant other, like, just make sure.
What do you do first thing in the morning?
I don't sleep with my phone on my, like, it's not my alarm clock. And everyone always says, oh, it's my alarm clock. So I have a battery-powered alarm clock that wakes me up because it lives in my bathroom, my phone. And I don't look at it until, like, after 8. You know, like, I need to kind of get through, because I don't want to be in defense mode, because I know that a phone, like, suddenly I'll, like, check email and, like, all these things that I miss. So I try to be, like, proactive. Like, I'm going to do these three things before I look at my phone.
Yeah.
And I find that to be super helpful. But it is in those interactions, I think, that's,
and
like,
do you make eye contact with your barista?
I do. It's like, well, I'll go to like a deli around the corner.
I'm
going to
try it, but it feels weird.
But it's not weird. Like, just try it, okay? And if it feels, because that's what's so cool is when you can sometimes be on you, it's like doing those things that feel unfamiliar. Like if you brush your teeth with your left hand and you just start realizing all these really automatic things.
Wait, what does brushing your teeth with your left hand do?
Well, just because, you know, suddenly we have such a routine. Or if you take a shower, it would like, you'd be like, sometimes, you know, you get interrupted. You're like, did I wash my hair or not? Like, did I do that thing or not? And you don't realize. And you sort of have such a routine that it's just such autopilot.
Yeah.
And I think that those things that take you off of autopilot are really important. And that's like those things that can kind of help you, I think, feel fresh and new. And notice like three new things about like your commute to work, or three new things about somebody you spend time with, because we get so good at like sort of the routine and autopilot, and we get good at like predicting how someone's going to behave. Like, instead, prime yourself for novelty. Like, look for newness, not newness, new products. Like, I want that lipstick back, but like newness.
Yeah. I do that on the subway. I play this game. I don't know if I've told you this, Jess.
No.
Where I'll like, because a lot of our job is to assess beauty. Like, we look at models all day.
Oh, yes. No, I know what game you're talking about.
And is this photo good or not? Like, literally, our job is like sizing people up. So I'll go through the subway, and if I'm bored, I'll make myself say my favorite visual feature about every single person on the subway.
I love that.
Very sweet thing.
Have you ever tried it?
No.
It like breaks you out of your thing, and then you just feel sort of like, I don't know,
altruistic in a way. I didn't tell them I like their shoelaces, but I'm thinking it.
Is that your version of like loving kindness meditation? I think so.
Am I
loving
kindness meditation? I think so. Like that. Okay, well, we're getting near the end here, so I have to ask you about like true beauty products because you do like fashion beauty. You came in your cute like coral happy dress. It's making me happy, by the way.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Also, maybe wear color. We wear a lot of black, don't we?
Color really makes a difference. I mean, there's a lot of research around that and how it helps. And one of my favorite studies was looking at actually just the color of your walls, too. And there's a color called, like, Drunk Tank Pink. It's like Pepto-Bismol Pink.
Drunk Tank?
Yes. Pink? And that's the name of it, of this pink color. It's a paint color. And there's a book by Daniel Pink. I think it might be called Drunk Tank Pink. And it's basically about how that color in a room is really calming and soothing. And I think they looked at it in prisons, and it was like a kind of calming, soothing color. And so some football teams decided, well, this is a great idea. Let's use it for when, you know, the visiting team comes. Let's put them in one
the
of those rooms.
I
so you
love
can sort of
that.
Use it in a manipulative way. But, you know, your surroundings and your clothes are your ultimate surroundings and environment. I mean, that's where you're living in. And
do you wear a lot of color?
I love black and I love white. And so I have to force myself to be on me in the morning. And I have a couple of really colorful things. Like wear that red dress, wear that like orange thing. And
ooh, it applies to red lipstick. We're always telling people like, and no woman wants to wear red lipstick. They always feel like, I can't wear red lipstick.
Yes. Well, red lipstick, you know, there's also studies looking at women who wear red lipstick or red t-shirts too, that they are like they feel more confident and in when they wear these like sort of brighter colors. And waitresses who wore red lipstick got more tips, and people thought like that's sort of condescending. Oh, men were thinking that they looked a certain way, and it was no, they actually felt more confident.
Oh.
So I do think there are those kind of moments where you know color can really affect you, or what you're wearing can really affect you, and it's the best argument for some red lipstick. And also though, I remember looking at this study of people that less really is more with makeup. I mean, men prefer it when women wear less makeup. Women prefer it when women wear less makeup. And like, we prefer it ourselves when we're wearing, like, we look more natural rather than weird. Like, that's something that's unfamiliar and strange. I mean, another pet peeve, those like yellow eyeshadows. Like, nobody wants to look like a leper. Like, there's no point. I mean, yes, in a fashion magazine and it looks cool, but like, in the layman's hands, I don't think so.
I definitely tried it a couple times. I can't lie.
I mean, I've tried those things at home just for fun and then wiped them off and then put on my, like, natural face.
I've probably tried it, like, probably six times.
It's such an opportunity, to be creative, I think, with color.
I was just playing. Just playing.
What about you? Are you, like, a beauty girl? What are some of your favorite beauty products?
I love that Biologique Repêchage stuff. Oh. I'm obsessed
with that P50 lotion.
I'm obsessed with it.
Like, put that on the list of things people always bring up too. That and RMS.
Fat Mascara Classics.
Yeah, we do. That's funny.
Greatest
hits. We should put those together.
Well, how's Fat Mascara? How's the name? How did you come up with that?
Oh, Jess can tell that story.
It's just like the beauty industry is like silly and fun and like outsized.
And hyperbolic.
And hyperbolic. So first of all, the name just like came. I mean, whether if you think it's bad, that's not a cool thing to say. Like, it
just
came to me.
Not telling the funny story. She was talking about how mascara wands were getting bigger and bigger. And she was like, I feel like soon I'm going to get the mascara wand at the drugstore. It's going to be the size of a blow dryer. And you just have to
bigger. Like, the size of, like a big, you know those big crayons that they sell for, like, kids? It's like a bank.
Yeah.
Or something. Like,
here's my,
and it's like,
here's
and
my
then you put it in
mascara.
Like, yeah, and you put it in, like, the shopping cart, like, the trunk of the car.
Like,
and that's the wand.
Because every pressure is bigger, better, bolder, 20
yes.
times.
But the name just, like, the name just came. But if you think it's a stupid name, then, like, that's not going to impress you. If you like the name,
I love
it.
I think
the
it's
name
really
just
funny.
Came to
yeah. yeah. I think it's really funny.
So, but we had all these names, and like that one, we just kept on coming back to, and then it was time. So
because
we
don't
want to
take it too seriously, because this industry can take itself kind of seriously.
Well, that humor is so important in everything, and
I
that's
like
another
the word
thing.
Fat
that,
too.
Me too.
It's chewy.
Yes.
It's
like, I know it's like cuddly and good,
like
warm.
A squishy baby.
Yeah.
Cozy.
Yeah, you don't like put your arms around it. Yeah. So.
Okay, so you're Biologique Recherche woman.
Love. I mean, I'm sort of head to toe in that. I love it.
And what about your hair that you're...
Oh, and I love Aquaphor. I'm so head to toe. That's my favorite product ever.
That's a good one.
Oh, okay.
It's the best. And hair, that Aesop stuff, I love that too.
Fancy.
It's amazing. And then somebody told me to buy 5% Rogaine, the mousse. And it has made my hair so much thicker. Really? And I used to have all these like clip-in hairs, and I was always call them like my children, like, or you know, my jewelry. They were these hair pieces that I could clip in, like in and out, and I've had them for years.
And you could do that yourself? You didn't have to go to the salon?
Well, Garen made them for me originally, and then they were like, so I called them like my jewelry because they were so expensive.
Your babies.
Such good care of them.
Yeah, I'm
and,
sure.
You brush them at I night and put them to sleep.
I had bangs. I mean, different. And there were like all these different pieces, and I love those. But actually with this 5% stuff, it's amazing. I don't even need them anymore. My hairdresser's like, oh my gosh, you don't even need them anymore.
That's so funny. I'm thinking that's a positive prescription because it wasn't like you were thinning or bald and went and got it. It was just like an add-on.
Yeah,
so you're taking
like a boost.
Your own advice.
Yeah. Oh,
cool.
And what about color? Are you into color makeup or like lipsticks or any? Other than your Tom Ford that got discontinued.
I think it was called like Vanilla Honey or something. I'm going to look into that. Please.
Yeah,
please do. In the wrong hands, which are my hands, I'm not so... I do think it's beautiful to watch makeup being put on. I agree with you. And maybe it's sort of like that thing where they say when you look at a beautiful piece of art or you're watching an artist, you're almost embodying the experience of it. Mm-hmm. You know, that you sort of have this... The art history expression is the beholder's share. So when you look at a beautiful piece of art, you sort of recreate the experience of the action of making that piece. So I think that's sort of the beauty maybe of watching makeup be put on as well, because you're almost having your mirror neurons are participating in the application
yeah.
of it. But so I do minimal stuff. I mean, a lot of those Tom Ford pieces that I just love. And
wait, I have to pause you. What are mirror neurons?
Those are everyone was obsessed with mirror neurons in like 2004, and it was sort of like
everyone was obsessed.
I must have missed it.
It was like the Tom Ford like Vanilla Honey of 2010 or something.
In the psychology world, yes. I guess.
Huge. No, but the idea of that your neurons like you would mirror my own in some way. So like if I made eye contact with you, like you wouldn't immediately look away. If I yawned, you might yawn. This sort of if I
because
my
we're
arm,
social animals, sort
yes.
of.
And sometimes and people who were on the spectrum were unable to sort of notice those social cues, and the idea that maybe there was a lot of thought and research then into like, or is that what is maybe with autism? Are they missing those sort of mirror neurons to make those connections? That sort of synchronized movement, that shared experience in some way that almost just we don't even notice we're doing it. That sort of happens unconsciously.
Yeah, like cool. With the makeup, like I'll open my mouth when someone else is getting mascara put
on. Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. Like you're sort of doing that thing, or like look up and they're having their mascara applied completely.
Absolutely.
That's exactly, those are your mirror neurons working.
I think I have strong mirror neurons.
That's really
that's a good
funny.
Sign. That's
okay.
good.
That's a good thing. I think we hit everything.
No, we want to know what fragrance she wears.
Oh, fragrance. We always ask that. Do you wear
Tom Ford Neroli. I love that. Oh.
Like in the blue bottle?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of androgynous. I love it.
Okay.
It's
really
it's good
like
for summer,
Tom
too.
Tom Ford Devotee.
Yes. A friend of mine sent me some. It was one of those, you know,
good friend
curses at the time. No,
oh, now you're hooked
really,
on it.
It was a curse in a way. It was such a lovely gift, and then boom, like I'm still there 5 years later. I just kind of can't let it go. And that Charlotte Tilbury, oh my gosh, that's heaven.
She's our spirit animal, so we understand.
She? Oh my goodness,
the makeup, or are you talking about the fragrance of
the
whole
makeup? I haven't tried the fragrance, the brushes, the makeup. No. It's heaven on earth. I tried to do an Adele eye on myself the other day.
How'd it go?
Not so well.
Well, one eye looked okay. The other one,
that's all we did.
Like a pirate.
They say they're sisters, not twins.
Oh.
So it's okay if they don't match exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well,
they also
like,
say that about brows. Yeah. Sisters, not twins.
I really like that. The idea of brows are just fascinating to me. And, you know, people who have like super arched brows, it's funny, like that scares children. You know how like all the witches in.
You're right, Cruella
yeah,
DeVille.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Ursula from
Maleficent.
Little Mermaid.
Yes.
Maleficent.
There
she
is
like
something about that really triangular
ones.
Face. Like the arched brow and the forward chin is the scary kind of witch face, though. And there is some. You know, belief around, I think you had mentioned Nancy Etcoff's book before about survival of the prettiest. And, you know, are we sort of wired to think of some things as beautiful? And I think some things that are scary, too. And it seems that, like, babies do, even with their blurry vision, respond to sort of more symmetrical faces than, you know, asymmetrical faces. And some people, they call it, like, the halo effect. Like, if you see a pretty person, you assume that they must be virtuous and kind and good. And these are maybe not conclusions we should all be jumping to. But the idea of also like faces that do scare us are those like high browed, pointy chinned ones though that like are, you know, what the witches of, you know, of what they look like in the show Wicked.
Yeah. Yeah. Hear that, straight brow people. It's okay to have straight brows. You don't need a high arch.
Don't overarch them. It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good advice. Is that a beauty tip? We're going to leave on that as a beauty tip, I think. This has been enlightening. Yeah, I kind of feel really more positive. Good. I'm like, do you feel positive?
I'm just going to be smiling at everyone.
Okay. Yeah, but maybe not on the subway, as Dr. Boardman suggested. Thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Thank you. This is awesome. You. I like Thank this you. One.
All right. It's not often that we talk about supplements, but when we do, you know that we mean it. All right. Every day I do my skincare routine, and that is a cleanse. I moisturize. Of course, I pop a little antioxidant in there. I'll do a little serum underneath there. But what is non-negotiable for me lately is I take a supplement. That is my Ritual Hyacera. It's a wrinkle support skin supplement, which is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and improve skin smoothness. I'll take that.
I'll take it too. Ritual Hyacera is a once daily skin supplement. Jess said clinically proven. Let me give you the deets. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to a 3.6 time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to placebo. Jess and I have been taking it more than 90 days. Let me tell you, it works. Plus, Ritual Hyacera has led to a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness in the same amount of times. It's rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You don't always know if a supplement does that. Ritual also has industry-leading sustainability standards. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, love that, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. Plus, female-founded, B Corp, meaning they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of the people and our planet. You gotta love that.
Yes, okay. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. Okay, everyone, guess what I did last night? I slept in my Honeylove bra. I don't think I've ever slept in a bra before. Usually, I am so excited to take off my bra at the end of the day, there would be no chance I would lay down in it. But Honeylove bras are that comfortable. And if you're someone who does like to sleep in a bra for a little extra support, I feel like the Honeylove crossover bra should be your sleeping bra. Did I just coin a thing, sleeping bra? I don't know if they'll approve of that, but I love the idea. Obviously, you're gonna wear it out all the time too, because Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with a fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. Is it spring cleaning time in your house? I know it is in mine. Clean out your bra drawer, get a few from Honeylove. They have the V-neck bra that's smooth and seamless and hardware free. And then my personal favorite is the crossover bra with adjustable straps and a hook back closure. And of course, again, no underwire in that one either. The Honeylove supportive bonding lifts and supports without those uncomfortable wires. And while you're at it, why not pair your Honeylove bra with their matching shapewear or maybe a pair of their breathable, versatile leggings? Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. It's honeylove.com/mascara. And then after you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we here at Fat Mascara sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Again, that website is honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off. Okay, so there are some stories about my mom's life that I never get tired of hearing, and they're usually the ones in which she's trying to right some injustice and then ends up annoying the people in power, and I love that about her. Anyway, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve memories and stories for the mother figure in your life or any of your family or chosen family. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. The prompts are really good. The kind of things we ask guests here at Fat Mascara, little things like what's your favorite board game? And more important things like what's the best advice you've ever gotten? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to the email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. You'll be emailed a copy of what they wrote, but they'll also be collected. So you'll get to enjoy the retelling of the stories and probably learn some new things in the process. Then, after that year of fun, Storyworth automatically compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. Even though I know some of my mom's best stories, I love that the weekly prompts are helping to uncover more details and that they'll be collected in one place for me to revisit and read through. Don't think I'm not going to pull this keepsake book out at our next family get-together to share some of them. Listen, everyone loves Storyworth. It has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/mascara. That's storyworth.com/mascara to save $10 on your first purchase.
Good.
Jess and I are on the same mic right now. I'm really close to you.
Oh, yeah.
Because, as promised, I am testing her hydration level. We're going to see if drinking all that water actually did anything.
I don't know why I need to close my eyes when I do it.
I don't know. I'm doing the exact same spot. This is very technical and very exact. You're 0% hydrated. Wait, let's try one more time.
The cap is on.
Oh, the cap is on! Okay, Jen is definitely not a scientist. Oh, starting again. Here we go. It's going. It's testing you. Dun, 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 dun. All right, hold on. Hold on, wait for it. 44.9%. What was it before?
Was it 44.6? No, I don't remember.
It might have been exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't think that this is the most accurate method.
You don't think that was a single variable, double-blind, placebo-controlled, many study participants study?
No.
Just to go back to hydration, put on moisturizer. Okay, what are you raising a wand to?
I really am very... thoughtful and measured about how often I mention Charlotte Tilbury.
Oh my God, okay, yes.
Because I use a really disproportionate amount of cosmetics from her.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I think that her line's incredible front to back. I've never met a product of hers I don't like. There are some I prefer more than others, but this one really tops.
What do you got?
You actually complimented my lips the other day. You said, I love that lip color.
Well, oh, you were glossy, because you don't often wear a glossy lip.
No, because I hate most glosses. They're usually all gross. This one is a lip gloss from her called Seduction, and it's the perfect, it's caramel the perfect lip nude. Gloss.
It's truly a beautiful nude. I can see it from here.
Yeah, and it's not transparent, but it's not so opaque that it looks like you've got, a color forms or those were called color forms. It doesn't look like color form lips or wax lips. But it's not so sheer that you're like, well, that was a waste of time.
And money.
Yeah. So.
Caramelly nude.
Yeah, a little 70s. And I even put it with a lip liner sometimes. But it's really nice.
Okay. And the name of it is?
Seduction.
And just she calls it lip gloss. There's not some fancy pants Hollywood doodad.
It's her only lip gloss, okay. Line that she makes right now. And it's on a doe foot wand. And it tastes good, too.
As you put it on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My Raise a Wand, I actually posted on Instagram my desk tray.
I saw that on its side.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
I put it out there to our followers on social media, at Fat Mascara, and I said, my Raise a Wand is in here. Can you find it? And all the guesses were, of course, it Cosmetics, because I had my CC Plus cream that I love, then Glossier and a couple others. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a trick question, though, because you could not see the label on this.
Nobody was going to get that.
I am raising a wand to Wonder Skin Skin Perfected Body Foundation. I know what you're thinking. Body foundation? I can barely put on face foundation.
Also, it's very showgirl.
You would think, but here's what happened. I went to the Berkshires this weekend. I jumped off a cliff. Which was awesome. I also sat on a waterfall and at the top of the waterfall, and I jokingly said to my friends, oh, wouldn't it be funny if this was like a slide? And as I was saying that, a big gush of water came down, and I went shooting off the edge of this little waterfall. I hit a rock, and I landed it was 6 or 7 feet. You can see the picture on my own personal Instagram of the cliff, @Jen_edit. Anyway, my shin got caught on a rock and ripped open and I had a cut.
Disgusting.
And then I had to go be on a fancy pants panel on Monday night and I was wearing a skirt and I was bruises everywhere because I fell everywhere. So I put on this Wonder Skin. I kid you not, you don't look like you have makeup on, but all of a sudden your legs are just perfected. Like, it is, I hate when people say it's like a filter. It's like the perfect blurring filter. It was exactly that for skin, and it did not rub off. Even when I got in the sheets, I didn't shower that night. I got my white sheets, and in the morning, there was no makeup anywhere. And I love Sally Hansen airbrush legs. That was my old favorite. Mm-hmm. This one has less pigment and more of the blurring technology, so you really don't feel like you have makeup on. If you're going to a wedding, do the Sally Hansen. It looks like pantyhose. It's amazing. But if you're just going to work or you're wearing shorts and you're maybe a little varicose-y or you got a lot of like age spots or you've got a big gash on your shin because you fell off of a waterfall, Wonder Skin Skin Perfected Body Foundation with IllumiCover technology. I raise a big old wand to it. Before we wrap up the show, I have a correction from last week. So one of our writers had written in about mineral oil. So I talked a lot about mineral oil and where it comes from. In my head, I was thinking of petroleum and petrolatum because that is a type of mineral oil. In retrospect, I think she was talking about pure mineral oil, which comes from crude oil, not from coal directly. So if for anybody that was confused, and at least one or two people were because they wrote in, what I was talking about was petroleum, but what I should have been talking about was pure mineral oil. We can do a blog on it if you're still confused. Email me info@fatmascara, but I just wanted to correct the record on that. And Jess is just nodding along. Help me out. Say, good job, Jen.
Good job, Jen.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening. We're growing because of people like you telling your friends and fam and all that. But if you really want to help us out, which would be amazing, please go over to iTunes and write us a little review or just throw us some stars.
5, please.
That would be incredible.
And if you want to know where to find any of the people or places or things we talked about, go to fatmascara.com and check out our blog. You can follow us on all the social channels @fatmascara or email us at info@fatmascara.com.
We'll even read your letters on the air.
So profesh.
So profesh.